Accession number 27789, Mr. Burt Wolstenholme,
Reel 4. Now, we're talking about when you were at with the 115 Squadron at Wychford, near Ely. Now, you were going to tell us some stories about going into the town. Was that Ely or Wychford itself?
No, Ely.
What would happen?
Well, this particular time, we'd all gone down. Usual thing, get as drunk as we could. We used to drink them days. It was black and tan, as we used to drink. And we used to sing a song in the pub and down a pint, then sing another chorus, down another pint. And so it went on till he was absolutely legless. And when he come out, they used to have what they call Liberty Wagons. They used to take you back to camp, but we missed the last Liberty Wagon. So we got a taxi. I know taxis were only supposed to carry five, but seven of us got in. Don't forget, we was all drunk. And the first one in was Andy. Andy got in and then we all piled in. Off we went back to camp. Anyway, when we got out of the taxi, only six got out. And the one that was missing was Andy. Anyway, we learnt later, because the police picked him up, what had happened, he'd gone in the taxi, opened the door on the other side, and stepped out and slept on the pavement. We went off without him. And the police picked him up and brought him back to camp. That was a story. That was one funny story there.
It's a cow.
Oh yeah, that was when it was very foggy. We had a stand down, and as usual, we went and we used to have bicycles. We used to go out in town in the old back. And anyway, coming back, it went very foggy. And I don't know if you've ever been on an airfield, but they used to have single flagstones and in between the nest nuts. And somehow or other, I got myself away from the rest of the lads. Probably the alcohol and the fog and everything. And I ain't got a clue where I was. I couldn't see more than an inch in front of me. It was very foggy. And all of a sudden, I could hear these footsteps behind me, and I thought, what the hell's that? And of course, the mind that was in it, it didn't register. And as I walked, these footsteps walked, and when I stopped, the footsteps stopped. Anyway, I thought, right, whoever it is, I'm going to turn around and I'm going to wallop them. Anyway, I started to walk, and these footsteps came again, and I turned around quick. And I'm not lying when I say this. I thought I'd seen the devil. There was these two big jets of steam, two big horns, and it was a bloody cow that had been following me. And, you know, and I thought I was looking in the face of the devil.
Being drunk as well.
So, but I did eventually find my way back to me up. The other thing was on, and that was repeated on, surprise, surprise, Skipper told this story, and this is absolutely true. We went for briefing at 2 o'clock. I can't think where I was going then. Don't know if it might have been Cologne, I don't know. But anyway, 2 o'clock, it was scrubbed. Come back at 4. So we came back at 4, and the weatherman said it's scrubbed again. So off we go, the usual thing, down to town, and we used to pub crawl in one pub into another. And at 6 o'clock, they put the trip back on again. Well, Skipper was up there, he didn't come with us. We're all down in town, so he had to get a taxi, and he had half a pint in each pub till he found us. God knows too. I've got it on tape there. And, well, time we'd all got back to camp and eat an hour a pint in each one, and we had to fly out at 7 o'clock or half past seven, sometime like that. And I don't remember a lot till Johnny. When I heard him saying we're crossing the coast of France, it was then that I started to realise just exactly where I was. Because up to that point, I didn't know, and I don't know how the skipper ever got it off the floor in the state he was in. And the funny thing was, I went to a reunion, and one of the chaps there, my old flight commander, Parkinson his name was, and he was telling me, he was in the aircraft behind us, and he said he watched us taking off. He said, take off, he said, it's like an elephant taking off. So, but we went, we come back. And going back to that Gelsenkirchen one, there was, when we landed, there was 79 holes in the aircraft we counted.
Is that the one we crash landed as well?
There was 79 holes in it, yeah.
Now, any other raids? Remember, you mentioned one was cancelled. Well, not cancelled. You were recalled.
No, that was Cologne.
What do you remember? That looked, may have been your first one from the looks of things. Well, it's your second. There was a raid on Cologne.
Oh, I can't recollect the month or what.
Now, but what do you remember about it being cancelled?
Well, we set out to bomb Cologne, and just got over the coast of France, I think it was, going over Holland way. And I got a message from base about the mission, because the Americans had taken it. So obviously we couldn't bomb the Americans. So the skipper says, well, we'll have to, oh, that was it, find alternative targets. That was a message I got. So skipper decided he'd bomb the bridge at, was it Rheingate bridge. It was a bridge anyway. That's where we dropped our bombs, on the bridge, and then we just came on.
Now, as I say, the Cologne one mentioned here is the 2nd of March 1945. Anything else you remember about any of the raids? There's one on Hulse, one on Ham.
Ham. Oh, yeah, that was.
What do you remember of the one on Ham? That's on the, looks like the 20th of March.
Yeah, that. There was. I think it's one of the 1,000 bomber raids, that, although there was never 1,000. Might be 900 and all, but never 1,000. And they went in different waves. And I just can't bring to mind what wave we was, but anyway, when we went in, it was just one mass of flames, and, well, you couldn't even see the markers, now more than anything else. So we just dropped our bombs, and they were cookies then, what we call cookies.
What are they?
About the length of that there, and about just a shade higher, but round.
So about 8 foot long and 2 or 3 foot high, and round.
Yeah, yeah. Those are cookies.
So really big.
Oh yeah, yeah. The aircraft, you should go like that when you let it go.
Shoot up.
Yeah. That's beside the 500 pounders, you know, carried, and the firelighters. We had our firelighters as well, and we dropped a lot in the flames, but. At that time, it was there was a name for it. There was a firestorm. What had happened? We started a firestorm, and I believe what I heard from, you know, went on the grapevine. You can't take it for granted. But we heard it was about 40,000 people died in that one.
Did it? I mean, I'm not in any way put in things. Did it worry you at all, the civilian casualties that would be caused in any bombing raid?
No.
Could you just talk a bit about that? How did you feel about that?
I didn't feel a thing, actually, because, in the first place, we weren't seeing it with our own eyes, if you know what I mean. You weren't looking at dead bodies. We were up there about 20 thou, and you know what was happening on the ground. It was just one big fire. And when I, what made it more so, is I used to think back on London, and how they bombed London and Manchester and Coventry, and because we used to write on the cookies, here's one for Manchester, here's one for London, and you had no thought of people you were being killed, plus the fact you was too engrossed in doing your job that you were supposed to do.
Now, anything else about the raids you were on?
Not as I can think of. Can't think. Nothing else I can think of.
Now, it was getting towards the end of the war. You know, there's two dropping supply drop raids on. Well, they're not raids, are they? It's a supply drop mission onto the Hague.
Oh,
first and second. Do you remember those?
Yeah, that was Operation Manna. They called a truce, the Germans, because there was neither them or the Dutch people had no food or anything. And we had to fly in at 100 feet. And be honest with you, that was more nerve-wracking than what general operations was. Because as you flew over, being so low, you could see the Germans on the 88mm guns. You could see them pulling us over with the guns, like, you know. And I used to think to myself, blah, if one of them's got an itchy finger, they can't miss us, you know, 100 feet. And as we flew over, you could see there was an hospital there, and all the nurses on the roof waving to us. And one of them nurses, funny enough, turned out eventually to be Skipper's wife. He married her after the war. But we were so low down, you could see all the people standing around.
And where did you drop the food? Just did you have special places to drop it, or did you just drop it where you liked?
No, it was in a field. You had special places, yeah.
And that's May 1st and 2nd, you do that. And then, you know...
Went to Bali after that.
That's after the war finished?
Yeah.
Anything else about... do you remember VE Day? I mean, did you celebrate that at all? That's May the 8th.
No, I can't say. We just went and had a few pints. We didn't do no...
There are no big celebrations?
No, not like there was in London. Nothing like that, no.
Now, what about this trip to Barry? What do you remember of that? That's... what were you doing?
We're bringing prisoners of war back. Not prisoners of war. Lads out of the tank.
Did you do any prisoner of war missions?
Yeah, that was...
Were they first or after?
I don't know, I can't remember if it's first or after now.
Well, let's say Barry.
I think that was called not Cook's Tour, that was another one. I can't think of the name of that one. We brought prisoners of war back from Brussels.
That's about 24th, 26th of May, of May. Let's do that first, because I think Barry is a bit late in that. What do you remember of those trips? What state were the POWs in?
Too bad, not what I could see of them, you know, they're not too bad, just happy to be going home, you know. I wouldn't say they were maltreated or anything, you know.
And Barry, what happened when you went to Barry?
Well, I was a bit naughty on that one.
That was bad.
I knew when we went there, they had no tea. They couldn't get any tea in Italy. It was in short supply. So I used to buy two packets of tea, empty them out, put sawdust halfway in each packet, and fill the rest, the other half, up with tea. So I've got two packets of tea for the price of one. Right? I'm admitting this.
You just spit in the apples.
And then when we got there, obviously you had a meal and everything, And then we used to go down to the shops and that, offering tea for a bottle of wine or something. And yeah, for one packet of tea, you used to get two bottles of wine. And if you said, got two packets of tea here, and you used to get four bottles of wine. But they were only getting one packet of tea, really. And I used to bring me wine back from there.
That's in August, late August.
Yeah.
Anything else about the Barry trips?
Well, when the tank lads used to come, I can remember one. It was one of my jobs was to make sure that they'd had something to eat in case they were being sick, you see. I used to go down and say, you had something to eat, and I'm fair enough. And there was this captain or whatever he was in the army. And he said, oh, don't worry about my lads. He said, they've been all the way through in tanks and God knows what. And he give me the old grip he was. I said, well, it's a bit choppy up there. I said, I hope you're all right. Anyway, we all piles in. Oh, and I used to have to show the lads how to fix the Mae West song. And anyway, we all piled in. And this captain or whatever he was, I forget what rank he was now, he had a pips up here. And he was sat on the bulkhead next to me. God's honest truth. Anyway, we gets up there and it was choppy. It was like that. All over the place, you know. And I could see this bloke. I could see his colour starting to come up. And all of a sudden, we had sick bags there for him, you know. And I grabbed one of these, I gave it to him. He was sick as a dog. And when we got back home, we went to Arlington. Is there a place called Arlington?
I think there is, but I don't
know. I can't remember now. But anyway, when we got back there, I said to this bloke, I said, I did warn you. You know, I said, I did warn you. He said, oh, I didn't think it would be that bad, he says. So he was sick as a dog and he was starting to tell me how tough he was. And that was the coming from Barry.
And you seem to have had 20 passengers on these things, you know. This is Operation Dodge, I think.
Oh, Dodge, yeah.
Anything else about that time? Any other missions you flew that you remember?
We used to take aircraft. We got posted to St. Morgan in Cornwall.
And when was that? The whole crew do? Or just you?
No, they're just me. That's when we picked Jim up. Yeah, that's when we picked Jim up.
Jim McGillivray.
Yeah. And it was white, what do we call? No, there was a Lincoln, I suppose, which was like the Lanky, only it had a tail in the middle as well. You know, it had three tails. And we used to take them to Egypt, dump them there and come back in the Liberator. Well, twice we came back in.
Now, is this your full crew, or I'm not quite sure who's doing this?
No, Skipper, we had Skipper and I was a while. So
were you still with 115 Squadron?
Yes, at St. Morgan's.
And so tell us about these trips to dump. You're dumping the Lincolns, are you?
Yeah. Yeah, we're dumping them at. And we had to, there was one thing I must tell you about this, it's just come to me. Castle Bonito, we had to refuel. And while we was waiting for the aircraft to be refueled, this is a sight I'll never forget. There was a Stirling, and that was bringing chaps back home from abroad. I don't know where he'd come from, Barry or whatever. And I saw him taking off. He got about 80 feet in the air and it just blew up. Just went like that. And well, it was too horrible to see, really. All you could see was these bits and pieces dropping down to earth again.
And what had caused it?
I don't know. I don't know because the after that, they cleared all the bits and pieces off the runway and we took off back for home again. But I never knew what caused it.
Anything about these trips? How many times did you take Lincolns out to North Africa?
I think it was about 3 times altogether.
Anything else happen?
No, after that, the York. We ferried some Yorks to same place, Egypt, yeah. I think we had a couple of them Yorks.
It was Egypt you were going to, in North Africa?
No, it was Egypt, yeah. I don't know what they were doing with the prisoners. They must have bought them off the REF or something.
Now, what happened then?
What, you mean when we got to Egypt?
No, I mean, just generally, I mean, after the ferrying Lincolns and Yorks out to Egypt.
Well, oh, by the way, when the mob day came, all the crew went.
Hang on, is that from Morgan?
That's me.
St. Morgan's, you would.
Yeah.
Now, when was that?
Oh, now you got me.
1946?
Probably we can. I know. Okay, I'm a bit hazy on the date here. I know I wanted to stay with Skipper because he had a chance of going with BA, British Airways, and I wanted to stay with him, but I never got that far. I got demobbed instead.
And what happened when you were demobbed?
Well, we got the usual demob suit, Mickey Mouse suits as we used to call them. I went to get my job back at the Co-op, the butcher's job, and I was told that they couldn't give me my job back because I'd sacked myself by joining the REF. And that was the answer I got from the Co-op.
Now, weren't they meant to keep your job?
Well, when I left, everybody was giving me a pat on the back because I had to go down to the main depot in Downing Street, Manchester, and everybody was saying, oh, great lad, what a great job you're doing now, slap on the back and this, that and the other. And yet, when I went back, I was told I couldn't have a job back because I volunteered.
So what happened?
And then I spent 17 weeks trudging the seats trying to get a job. Oh, I met the wife on the first day I was demobbed and got married. After that, I trudged the streets for about 15 weeks, 17 weeks, something like that. Nobody gave me a job. They used to say, are you ex-service? I said, yeah, I'm ex-service, ex-RAF. Oh, sorry, we can't use you. That was because they wouldn't take the trouble to train you. And then out to be, it was one snowy morning, about 6 inches of snow, and I saw this little broken down place and I went in, and they used to colour photographs. Do you remember the old air gun, little air gun? And it was Jewish, and they gave me a job. And it was a Jew that gave me my first job.
And so as a photographer's assistant? Sort of
colouring thing. Photographs. Do you remember the old fashioned photographs? They used to use little sprays to colour them. And I've got a picture in there what I did.
So how long did you do that? Was that going to be a job for a long time? Or?
No, I didn't. The money was all right at the time. It got us by because the wife was expecting then. But I knew we had to go and get some more extra money. So I left there and I got a job on the railway.
What as?
As a shunter. And I was there quite a while. And I still hadn't got used to Civvy Street, and I was a bit wild.
Now, in what way? What were your problems in acclimatising? What was it? Was it drink or what was it?
No, it wasn't drink. No, because I wasn't drinking as much then. No, it was just that the excitement had gone out of my life. If that makes sense. Things were so mundane. Do you follow what I mean? And I was a bit of a wild wild cat.
What do you mean by wild? In what way?
Well, I had a bit of a temper. And when I was at the railway, I just finished making up a train. It was about 4 o'clock in the morning. And I had nothing else to do, so I went in the cabin, lit up a fag, and the inspector walked in and wanted to know what I was doing while I was sitting on my backside doing nothing. I said, well, I've made up my train, this, that and the other. Anyway, he kept on and on and on at me, and the next minute I knew, I just put one on him. And I was sacked. Then I went from there, I got a job at Crown Wallpapers. And I was doing well, I liked that job, it was maintenance work. But there was a chap there, the chief buyer, one of the chief buyers. And he was forever having dig, because when I came out of the force, I was a warrant officer, I finished up as a warrant officer. And he was a sergeant major in the army, and he kept, because I was his equal rank, he was constantly having a go at me. And we just dug out a great big hole inside the factory to put a new boiler in. When I say a big hole, big as this room, and it's deep, and he used to give us milk, because he sweat so much. And I just climbed out, and this bloke walked up to me, and he started having a go with this on the other, belittling me. And next thing I knew, up come the old fists again. And next thing, he was flat out in them. It was all muddy at the bottom. He was like a crucifix in the bottom. And although the chief engineer tried to get me off it, because he thought I was a good worker, and he tried to get me off it, but they wouldn't have it, the board of directors. So I got sacked.
Now, how long was it before you settled down to civilian life?
Well, when my son was about three or four, and
did you settle into a regular job, or did you change job?
What happened there, we managed to save up a little bit of money, and my mum and dad helped us out, and there was a shop selling off, so we bought the business off them, which was a mixed grocery, and I started up my own little place up in Cheetah Mill, and I had my own maintenance, and I had my yard with all my plumbing gear and that, and I taught myself, and I had quite a good clientele. And then I gave my cousin a job, and I had a young lad working for me, and I sent my cousin and young lad on the job, and I used to post the wages on to me.
Probably a bit too much about, I mean, did you settle down into a steady job, if you see what I mean?
Yeah, well, that was it then. That was my last time.
So you worked in that steady?
Yeah,
that
until I kept sending my wages to my cousin, and posted the wages on to the lad, and then I decided after 3 weeks to go and see how the job was going on. They'd never been near the place. And when I went to see my auntie to take it out of him, my auntie told me the last thing she knew was in Wales somewhere. I'd never seen him from that day to this. And of course, I owed so much to builders merchants, so much to this, so much to that, that I had to fold that business up. And I went back helping the wife with the mixed grocery. And I used to go down and get the stuff in the morning, bring it all back. And then we moved to Basildon.
What did you do there?
Where?
At Basildon. Carried on with the shops?
No, we sold the business back home, and we moved into Panadown, and I got a job with landscaping here, which I knew was only going to be a temporary job until I could pick myself up with something good. Then I got a job at Borg Warner's, which at the time was... That wasn't Bob Warner's, it was...
So what were you doing?
I work in the stores there. And I worked myself up to supervisor in there. And then came over the tannoy, 80 of of us, all supervisors and what have you, foremen, all made redundant. I was 9 years there, and I came out of there, and a week later I started at Guild Barcos. I got a job right away in the stores, and blow me down, 3 years after that I was made redundant again. And
so you never stayed in one job particularly for a long time?
No, Borg One was the longest, 9 years altogether. And then of course the wife died, and I did want to sit here doing nothing on my own, so I got a part time job as security at Alders. You'll never believe it. 2 years later, I was made redundant again.
Yeah, a lot of jobs.
And then I retired then. I've not worked since.
Thank you very much.